Kylie Zeck is a holistic health coach and natural health advocate specializing in autoimmunity and chronic illnesses after reversing two autoimmune conditions naturally in 2016. She's also a wannabe comedian, the life of any party, especially if there's dancing involved. And she also just happens to be the mother of our two beautiful kids and my wife of 7.5 years. So Kylie and I, as I've said, have been married for 7.5 years, but we've been together since we were 16 years old. So we've basically grown up together and we've seen and been through and experienced all of each other's phases, as you can imagine. In all seriousness, though, if it weren't for Kylie, I wouldn't be here doing what I'm doing today. And what we discussed today is exactly what led me to be doing what I'm doing right now. Kylie and I finally found some time to record this podcast episode that we've been wanting to do for quite some time. But as you can imagine, we use our free time together to go on dates and other things like that. But I know a lot of people have been wanting us to record this episode, and a lot of people have been asking Kylie to record this episode, so we decided that it was time. So in this episode, we recount Kylie's story of healing lupus and rheumatoid arthritis naturally, the steps she took to heal, the differences in birth experiences of our two children, our story of learning about terrain-based health and what we think, quote, autoimmunity is, and our changes in general and perceptions on health between 2020 and 2024. And I expect, based on everyone's feedback, we'll probably bring Kylie back on again because it was an awesome episode, and we'll have multiple episodes with Kylie, maybe some Q&As, maybe some stuff on parenting and just holistic lifestyle in general. So expect more from Kylie on this podcast in the near future. Also, don't forget to join us April 5th through the 8th for Confluence. Look, I know I keep plugging this event, but there's a reason that I keep plugging this event. It is awesome. I've said this before about Music in Sky, which is another event that I love. And I highly recommend you go to that as well, especially if you're in the California area. But Confluence and Music in Sky are like a farmer's market and a music festival and a conference, and maybe like an evangelical church service had a baby together or merged in all of the best qualities of those things. That would be what Confluence is. It's awesome. So check out the after movie in the show notes, but it's a one of a kind gathering on a regenerative ranch amongst health and freedom community, and includes workshops, lectures, regeneratively grown food, music, dancing, camping, glamping, bonfires, a healing tent with massage therapy and flower essences and a bunch of cool stuff, and then a vendor village. And just, oh, also one more thing. This one's really important. I posted this on my Instagram. I think one of the most attractive things from the outside is that there is a naturally magnesium rich pond to swim in on site. And I think we're going to have some DJ sets by that pond. So it'll be like poolside DJ sets, but the whole thing is awesome. And anyone who's attended, could tell you the same. If you go look at some of the posts that I've made about Confluence on my Instagram or on Telegram, you'll see that people who went last time are like, oh, this event is incredible. So definitely recommend checking it out if you can. You can find tickets for that at confluenceevent.com. And if you enter code ZEC10 at checkout, you get 10% off your tickets. You can also find information about that in the show notes. Okay, without further ado, enjoy this episode with my wife, my beautiful, beautiful wife, Kylie Zeck. I just have so many thoughts coming up, and it's just cool to see us here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always think about us doing this in the car. We always have these conversations in the car where I'm like, oh, I wish we were recorded that.
Oh no.
And now that it's time to do it, I'm like, Hey,
let's just stare at each other.
What's
awkwardly.
Up?
Well, I mean, the thing is we've been together since we were 16.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen all of each other's phases. We've dealt with all of each other's stuff.
It I'll wasn't just a phase.
Mostly my stuff, but I'm...
That's not true.
Well, okay. I'm so just grateful to be in this place with you. Luckily, I cried a little bit before this, so I won't cry as much, but it's rare to have what we have considering what we've been through. And I'm honored to be your husband. I mean, well, this is off to
how are we gonna get through
good
this?
Start. Yeah, so we met when we were 16 years old, and the first thing that I ever said to you in the hallway was, I was a sophomore in high school, you were a junior, is, damn, there's that new fine girl. And it was an attempt to try to embarrass you, actually, as you know, because I already had the presupposition that you were going to be this sort of, how do I put this, pretentious, stuck up. White chick that is coming into, I don't want, I mean, our high school is cultured. That's, yeah. That's the truth. And that's what I assumed. And, so that was the first time I saw you, but it's crazy because I've said recently this image that I always go back to, this time that I always go back to, even with all my stuff at that time, 16-year-old boy going through what I've gone through in my life. I knew there was something about you, and I remember exactly what you're wearing, and I just remember seeing you outside, and that's like when I knew there was something
crazy
there.
Because we have that same pivotal moment.
That's why I brought it up.
Ingrained into our memory of that exact moment of like making eye contact, and I know what you were wearing, that Hollister zip up striped sweater. I don't even remember what I was wearing, but I remember what you were wearing.
Green shirt and just blue jean shorts. That's it. That's all I remember.
Yeah. But we met each other and I was like, I'm going to marry him. It was probably after you said, there's that new fine girl. And I was like, yes, I'm going to marry him.
Then?
No.
I'm like, there's no way.
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of making fun of it, but I still was like, oh, he's cute.
Yeah.
And then I remember trying to run into you in the hallway and being like, hey, do you know where this class is? And you're like, no, sorry, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was either that day or the day afterwards. I think it was that day after school is when you were like, that's when we had that moment. We were like, oh, I like you.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have text messaging then. So we had to be old school and you had to call me to hang out.
And we went on our first date at Styx.
And I drove.
Stuff. And you drove because I wasn't driving yet even though I was 16 because basketball was my life back then and I didn't really have time. There's so many threads
avenues.
We could pull. I mean, we've been together. We grew up together, essentially, right? So the purpose of this episode, though, because so many people have been dying to just hear this story, and I'm sure there are probably 10, 20 episodes that we need to do.
Probably.
Yeah. Is focused on you and your healing journey, because that is what sent us down the path for me to be doing what I'm doing right now. And I was just standing in our backyard, just like reflecting on everything, where I am right now, where we are right now together with our two beautiful kids, and just having such a deep love and come into such a deep partnership and respect for each other, especially with everything that we've been through. But let's go with your healing story. So before I met you, you had already been diagnosed with something autoimmune related, but at that time they weren't quite sure what it was. So when did the diagnosis come in and when did your quote autoimmune symptoms begin?
Well, the thing about autoimmune is that it's incredibly difficult to pin down because everything looks like everything else. I mean, there's specific tests that you could do that I was doing, like for Sjogren's, you have to like put something in your eye and then you do like a tear test. And so like there's certain blood things and tests like that. But at the point that I met you, there was no formal diagnosis at that point. It was still like, we're not really sure.
Something's up. There's some hyperinflammation.
Yes, you're definitely positive for autoimmune. And that was reflective in my blood work at the time because I'll back up because 2 years before I met you, that's when I got really sick. And it was mono. It was Epstein-Barr virus.
Yeah.
Air quotes. And then I just never got good after that. I never felt good after that. I never got better. I was on the floor before school crying to my parents, like, something's not right. I was going to the nurse's office probably at least 3 times a week, or maybe because I hated biology. I'm not really sure. But it was at that time that, well, and then shortly after that, I also got my wisdom teeth out. And then I had a dry socket infection. So there were several things during that time before a formal diagnosis that was kind of lining up to really become a chronic illness.
What was your diet like at the time, and movement, exercise? Oh,
Pop-Tarts, Little Debbie donuts. I was on the dance team. I was very active, actually. I did sports. I did track, soccer, volleyball. And then at this time, when I got really sick, it was dance team. And then I got mono and I couldn't do dance because my spleen was enlarged and they were worried about that. And then, so then I became sedentary. And so then I wasn't moving my body. And then, so that was kind of like a personal hell, because it was like, well, you can't really move because you have this enlarged spleen. And I really wanted to be out there with my dance mates and dance and perform, because that was like an outlet. Looking back, dance was always my outlet and I couldn't do it. But at that time, we were still doing Army healthcare. So I was going to see a doctor.
Rheumatologist at this time or not yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I mean, they were working towards that, but they were like, well, let's run some blood work and this, this, and that. We don't really know what to do with you. And, you know, Army healthcare is like socialist healthcare. And then finally, it was like a year later, they were like, okay, well, let's go ahead and send you to Children's Mercy. And that's when I saw a rheumatologist for the first time, which was in Kansas City before I met you. And then, so I was going out to Kansas City a couple times a year. And that's when I would see a massage therapist, a child psychologist, a rheumatologist. And they were all trying to create this plan of action for me. But still, even then, they're like, well, we don't really know what this is. We just know that you're super inflamed and we wish we had a magic wand for you. And back then, we were so focused on getting a diagnosis, because then it was like, for me, it would be validating, like, oh, yes, you are sick. Because at that point, it was like, well, you're telling me all these symptoms and there's some things, there's blood work to back it up, but we don't really know what to label you. And so for therefore, in my mind back then, I was like, well, then it must not be real. If you can't give me a label, it must not be real. And that's why I clung so hard to the label later on, which wasn't until I was 18. Because once I turned 18, the child rheumatologist no longer was able to see me. So then I was referred to KU Med.
We grew up near Kansas City, by the way, just for context.
Yeah. And that particular day, I was actually in college at this point. So my parents had retired from the Army, moved out to Colorado, and I went to go and do this by myself. It was the first appointment by myself without my mom being there with me, because she was my advocate. She was like, we got to figure this out. There was history of autoimmune in the family. And so she was my advocate. And so this was the first appointment I had by myself. They had all my blood work and history of, I guess, documentation. I'm so far removed from that life. I don't even know what that's called anymore.
Just medical history.
Medical history. Yeah. Thank you for that. And within that day, they were like, yeah, it's lupus. And I was like, first off, I was by myself. I was 18 years old. I felt like on one hand, it was a death sentence. And then on the other hand, it was like, okay, well, at least I know what it is now. At least I'm not just guessing and it's real and valid. Because part of the job of the child psychologist to talk to me, they were like, are you sure you're not really, you know, making this up? And I was like,
oh, you're trying to say it was all in your head.
Yeah.
Which
in retrospect, I'm like, maybe it is.
Maybe it is. But all in our head, heart, emotions, all that stuff.
Yeah. But, and I'll get to that. Yeah. But so I don't know if you want me to get into a list of symptoms of what I was experiencing, but
Well, before we get to that, how did they determine, and this might tie into the list of symptoms, how did they determine that it was lupus? Mm-hmm. Was there a certain test panel that was done?
I don't even think they did anything else that day besides look at my history. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, no, we're going to go ahead and go with lupus.
Okay.
And then here's where the plot thickens, because I started going to see a doctor out in Colorado now at this point, because that's where my parents were. And that's where I was returning home, because I was a student at Kansas State University. And then I would return home to visit my parents. And I was still at that point.
They had moved to Colorado.
They had moved to Colorado, yeah. And so then I transferred to a rheumatologist out there. And he goes, well, I'm thinking it's RA and some form of undifferentiated connective tissue disorder or disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. So these doctors are giving me two different diagnoses.
K-Med, lupus.
Yeah.
Doctor in Colorado, rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And
undifferentiated connective tissue disease.
Got it. Okay. And what were your symptoms?
So chronic pain, chronic fatigue.
Pain where? Like
everywhere.
Okay.
Like I would put my hands down the sides of my legs, like on my thighs, and it would be so painful to the touch. And then in college,
there'd be some days where I couldn't touch you, and boy, did I want to
stop it. You gotta edit that out.
No, we're not editing that out. Nope.
Uncut version, extended plus version. Okay. But what were we talking about? You got me all.
Your symptoms. Yeah. So there's days where it just to the touch, like light touches, I remember.
Yeah. So like the cold weather, ice cold water, I could not even be near it. There'd be times where I couldn't even lift my arms above my head because it was just so painful in my joints. So it was my joints and my fascia that was extremely painful. I would say that those two were the most nagging forms of symptoms that was manifesting. I couldn't sleep at night though, because I was in so much pain. Mm-hmm. So I was on Ambien, which was insane to be on Ambien.
Which doctor prescribed you Ambien?
I honestly think that was my child rheumatologist.
So you were already on medications before you got the formal diagnosis.
Yes.
Okay. And what was the Ambien for?
To put me to sleep, because I was in so much pain.
My goodness. Okay. And so,
and then I was hallucinating, and that's when we're like, okay, maybe we should not do this.
Yeah.
But that was just part of the regimen. It was like prednisone, tramadol. Those were like as needed, which was pretty much all the time. And so also birth control. At this point, I was already on birth control because my periods were so bad. I always forget to talk about my periods during the story because I, as a woman, have been so shut off to that part of myself of, you know, just the shame around periods, like not being educated on what a healthy menstruation is supposed to be like. And so I always forget to add this in, because now that I'm actually diving into hormones and all that stuff, which I'll get to, I just always forget that that's a part of my story, that I was fainting because of my periods. I remember at school, I fainted. I have fainted a handful of times because of how painful my periods are. And just how heavy and uncomfortable they were. So I was already on probably my third form of birth control at this point. It was a big trial and error period for about 5 years until I was finally on hydroxychloroquine. Am I allowed to say that on here?
Yeah. And probably have to delete it from YouTube or like bleep you out. Yeah.
And Citalopram, which was an antidepressant,
was it because of the symptoms?
It wasn't because they thought I was depressed. It was because they thought it would help calm my nerves, and not like my nerves, like, oh, I'm nervous. It's like my nerve pain that I was having.
Yeah. So my point is, these are multiple doctors, right, who are prescribing you these medications, these pharmaceuticals, and at any point, did any of the doctors that you saw mention anything about what you're eating, anything about mindfulness, anything about movement?
Not one.
Not one.
Ever.
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah, never.
So when you say it was trial and error, it was simply just trial and error on of pharmaceuticals. Drugs. That's it.
Yeah.
Not trial and error on different approaches, just like, no, oh, and this what's drug crazy doesn't is work. That, okay, like, let's try this one.
I would see a commercial on TV for like Lyrica, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to try this one next.
Because that's all you knew too, though.
Yeah. I mean, because...
Especially back then, had you looked up, as I'm sure you did, like, oh my God, what does this mean? Lupus, type it in. I'm sure you found a bunch of pharmaceutical results about people trying various drugs to help with the symptoms of lupus or rheumatoid arthritis.
Honestly, I really struggle to remember a lot of that period of time of my life. And is it because of the drugs or because of the trauma of the situation? I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Probably a combination.
Okay, so how did that diagnosis become your identity in a way? Because I remember, especially throughout the time you're in college, you really identified with that label of lupus and rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And we had multiple conversations, especially after we got engaged, where you were describing how you may not live as long as me. You may end up in a wheelchair.
Which I'm sure was so dramatic. But I did, to my defense, I've known people who've lost relatives or loved ones, a mother to lupus, complications to lupus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that was like the extreme case.
Yeah.
But I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to have kids because one, my menstrual cycle was already psychotic. Mm. At this point in time, I had Implanon in my arm, which is a constant stream of hormones, synthetic hormones in my system. But I really identified with the label because to me, that meant validation.
Mm.
Like, this is real. And this is what I like. It's like I can complain to you about a laundry list of symptoms I have, or I could be sick and you wouldn't really believe me unless I said it's lupus. Mm. A doctor told me it's lupus. So therefore you have to identify that within me that I'm sick and feel bad for me. Not necessarily feel bad for me, but I wanted people to understand me because with chronic illness, you can't see the symptoms. You just see the person suffering. And I had a lot of people who didn't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody around me was partaking in normal college activities and I couldn't. I was on this drug called Effexor and I knew for a fact.
When were you put on that?
Sometime in college. I think it was my junior year. And I couldn't drink because I would have gone cray cray.
And
I don't
know.
You're
a bartender, which probably made it a little hard.
Well, that was before actually I was a bartender.
So you were, so in total though, you're on Effexor, Plaquenil.
I can't even tell you. Plaquenil
Ambien.
Is hydroxychloroquine.
That's what I said. Yeah. Plaquenil, hydroxychloroquine, Ambien, and there's another one that you
there's
mentioned.
I don't
you're on a whole
Lyrica.
List of, Lyrica. Yeah, you're on a whole
that
list
one I
of,
remember being on and driving to my birthday dinner feeling high as hell because I was like, oh my God. Like I was in constant state of because of all the drugs I was trying, I was in a constant state of withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the lines got blurred of, is this my illness or is this a reaction
drug.
To a drug I'm taking?
Well, that's, yeah. So when you were on these drugs, let's back up actually. So before you got on the drugs, you were chronically inflamed before
mm-hmm.
you were on them.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point you got your ESR SED rates tested and that's, you know, supposedly the inflammation levels in your blood
mm-hmm.
and they were off the charts according to a doctor.
They were, if I can remember, it was like 78. And then the normal range for my age was like 22.
Mm-hmm.
So there were 78. And then on the combination of Plaquenil and citalopram, of course I had prednisone as needed, all those things. I had at 45, like 42, between 42 and 45 SED rate, which was for me like, okay, I can deem this normal, my new normal.
Yeah. So it lowered your inflammation.
It did.
Right.
So it was bearable.
Yeah.
It was still not like, I feel great. It was like, okay, I can adapt to this new level shit feeling.
Right. But it was just suppressing the symptoms. And then that toxicity was coming out in other ways, especially with the drugs creating more symptoms, which led them to prescribe you more drugs.
Well, yeah. And I wasn't also educated on diet or anything. So I would have constant flare ups where I would several times throughout college, because I was so stressed, emphasis on stress, I would go to the hospital, the ER. My college roommate would take me to the ER, and I would go get hooked up to morphine for the day and just hang out on morphine because I was having a flare up, and that was normal.
Yeah. You say you weren't educated on health, mindfulness, things like this, and natural.
No, I know you're going to. I just remembered something. Like, I wasn't educated on that stuff at all. But this is when my intuition, like, in hindsight, I was like, holy shit. I knew from a very young age, regardless of being so muted intuitively by drugs, I can remember telling people, like, I know I need to change my diet. I know I need to do something about that. But, you know, I was a college kid. I loved going to the gas station just because I could to get, I mean, I love Dr. Pepper so much that I couldn't even taste it anymore. It was just a hobby at that point. But I commend myself. Like, wow, my intuition was actually so strong at that age. I just didn't listen to it.
But you had the cognitive dissonance of, this is what I was going to bring up. You were not knowledgeable on holistic health at all. Not even a little bit, or even a step above that, just the importance of nutrition from just a meta lens. But the point is, you, like many people in the US, were conditioned to believe that these doctors knew best for you. So you're presenting to them with this chronic inflammation and you're expecting that they will have the solution for you. So I don't think at that point in time you would have even had the wherewithal. Luckily you did have that intuitive hit, like something about my diet, something about my diet. But again, you were outsourcing, as many of us do, justifiably, given how we're raised in Western society, to these medical doctors. And several of them told you, didn't say anything related to diet.
They said they
wish
they had a magic
like
wand for me. But yeah, of course I would look to them for that expertise because I was too exhausted to think about anything else. I was just trying to keep my head above water as a college student and finish out school without failing, which sucked because it did impact my grades. And then I couldn't go do XYZ with OT school and all that. But
in hindsight, how big of a role do you think your emotional state at that time and some of the things that you had dealt with when you were younger and throughout high school and college and just growing up as an army brat and your dad was a full bird colonel and there was times that you thought he was dead because of where he was stationed or where he was deployed to and things you would see on TV and know that he was the only one of the only colonels at that base and you would see something about a colonel having been killed in that area. How big of a factor do you think that played into your health at that point in time?
Oh, I'm sure it was all of it. There was so much. Well, I can't even, for me and who I am and who I've always been, is I like to shove it down and not feel it. And I've also always absorbed everybody around me, not only because I know that now because of human design, but because I'm so highly sensitive that I'm sure, one, it's a hypervigilance trauma response, but I also see it as my gift. I walk into a room and I immediately know who they say they are and who they're not. But I also have never energetically protected myself. And so this is something I'm learning now, but in hindsight, there were so many things. I mean, before I met you, I had a toxic relationship. My first relationship was so toxic.
Our relationship was also toxic though.
Yeah. But before I met you, it was really toxic. My second boyfriend was very, very toxic. And I don't hold that against him. I mean, we were kids, but my dad was deployed. I was an army brat, so lived in really old housing. And just, I kept everything inside. Everything was trapped inside, and therefore my body hurt in pain, I think. And that's a huge piece of it, for sure. But didn't have that until, I didn't have the wherewithal until recently that I was like, oh, wow.
Last 3.5 years, really. Yeah,
absolutely.
We'll get to that whether it's on this episode or another episode, but I just wanted to bring that into the conversation because we've come to understand how big of a factor emotions are and undealt with trauma are with respect to the manifestation of actual physical symptoms of mm-hmm. illness. And, you know, you're on all these pharmaceutical drugs that are just suppressing those symptoms mm-hmm. and actually increasing the toxicity that you would have to deal with later down the line and the emotions associated with
it. Totally numbed me out.
Yeah.
So I was already numb to begin with because that was my nature, but then you added the pharmaceuticals. I was like numb.
Yeah.
And I liked that better than feeling anything.
Well, you, again, you didn't have the tools to even understand that you needed to.
Right.
And so many people in our society, I think especially in military communities, just cope by either going to a doctor and being prescribed benzodiazepines and SSRIs or just other, some form of psychotropic medications or drinking or, I mean, there's so many toxic things in military culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of just what you grew up around. So mm-hmm. you didn't have an understanding otherwise. If you're enjoying this episode, please consider sharing it with at least one friend or family member who you think could benefit from hearing it. You help us grow and reach more people by sharing it with those around you. Also, be sure to head to the show notes to check out our membership offerings, membership marketplace, and more. We all know that Big Ag is poisoning our food supply and Big Pharma's so-called medicine is straight up poison. What most people aren't aware of, though, is that most supplements are also filled with artificial sweeteners, dyes, GMOs, glyphosate, and a host of other toxic ingredients, even many of the more natural supplements. My good buddy James Benefico dedicated his life to crafting the world's cleanest, most nutritious, organic supplements after a pre-workout energy drink caused heart palpitations so severe that he almost landed up in the ER. Organic Muscle was born, revolutionizing sports nutrition by using exclusively non-GMO ingredients from USDA organic farms. Since then, tens of thousands of people, including myself, have leveled up their fitness and their health with Organic Muscle's award-winning natural pre-workout. There's no jitters, no heart palpitations, no itchy skin, just nourishing organic food and herb-based ingredients for clean, sustained energy, strength, endurance, and recovery. Numerous studies have shown that tonka ali is the most effective herb in the world for naturally boosting testosterone levels. And we know that testosterone levels are depleting all over the world because of what's put in the food supply, what we're exposed to. Organic Muscle has the world's first fully organic tonka ali supplement. I only support and promote things that I actually use, and I can say I legitimately use Organic Muscle products. Use code FORWARD15 at checkout for 15% off at organicmuscle.com. So many of us dream of buying some land, growing our own food, and becoming self-sufficient away from a society that's gone completely mad. What if it's easier than we think to make that dream a reality? Siblings Jamie and Shelby over at Living the Off-Grid Dream have cracked the code to getting land and living a life of freedom. They'll show you where to find land for $1 down. That's right, $1 down, with low monthly payments, as well as how to structure your vision for a homestead, retreat center, regenerative farm, or community. It's one thing to have food, water, and land security, but it's an entirely different thing to have the financial security to buy the land and build it out in a way that aligns with your goals and aspirations. Their program teaches you how to make enough money on your land to cover all of your costs to make that happen. Plus, they've got you covered with pre-filled out plans to give you inspiration if you're not quite sure what your best move for your land is. And if you're a member of The Way Forward, you get a free one-on-one strategy call with Jamie and Shelby, as well as a free bonus gift. If you want to turn your homesteading, off-grid, or retreat center dreams into a reality, join Living the Off-Grid Dream by clicking the link in the show notes or heading to thewayforward.com/off-grid. Let's fast forward now to where the story starts to get a little bit better. So we get married. And
best day of my life.
Our wedding was pretty awesome.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun.
It was fun.
It was fun.
So we get married in 2016. And at this point, you know, my mom had started doing work with Dr. Kelly Brogan. And you had already had the intuitive hit of diet playing a huge role a couple years prior. So mm-hmm. it sort of just clicked for you, like, let's try this approach as well. Let's try this holistic lifestyle and see what it can do for you.
Yeah, but yeah, it was really you that was like, we're doing this. And I'm going to cry now, but I don't think I would have been able to, I wouldn't have been able to do it without you being there doing that with me.
Well, it changed my life too.
Yeah.
Especially seeing you completely transform.
Yeah. Well, and then I had to learn. Well, first off, I didn't know how to cook when we first got married anyways.
Yeah. I still remember the very first meal you made.
George Foreman grill, okay? I know.
It was a dry chicken breast, but you tried very, very hard. Well, it was also kind of challenging because
traumatized you with that because one, you always bring it up, and two,
no, I don't. I just
you
remember
put
the
sauce
first
on
meal.
Everything. I'm like,
no, I just like sauce on things. I like the Primal Kitchen, like Chipotle mayo and then the white mayonnaise, and then I'll sometimes mix it with sriracha. I like sauce. I like spicier sauce. Things. Sorry. And you don't like your version. Of spicy is something that has flavor, so
zesty.
Yeah, if it's like zesty, you're like, oh, that's spicy.
I'm a highly sensitive person, okay?
True.
And I have more.
Well, I'm also sensory seeking, and you're more sensory avoidant, so that also
I get overstimulated very easily.
We have two kids that yell. They're awesome, but okay. So we start this holistic lifestyle and. I see you sort of transform. So you started tapering off.
It was 3 months.
All of your medications. What were you on at that time? What
Citalopram.
Citalopram.
And that's, and Plaquenil.
Mm-hmm.
I got off birth control right before we got married. Because do you remember I had that first period in Europe?
Oh, yeah.
And I almost died.
I thought you were dying. We were in Greece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was my first period after getting off of birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And people probably thought I was like hungover or something, but I was literally, I couldn't keep my eyes open because I was in so much pain. I don't know. I was blacking out for sure on the side of the street. And I was pulling you to go and get ibuprofen because I was like, I just need something. I'm dying. And then this woman comes out, no English. She brings me
like
a
tea. Like an old lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was like behind in the back of the bakery and comes out, brings me this tea, and she's like starts talking Greece.
That was a good Greek impression.
I don't know, but she's like pointing at the tea, pointing at me, and she points at her midsection like she knew that it was my period. Like it wasn't like I'm hungover. And I drank the tea. I'm pretty sure I threw up. And then I went back to the Airbnb, was knocked out for 3 hours, and then I was like, okay, I'm good.
Really? That was your first introduction to holistic health right there?
Honestly, it was some herbal tea that she brought me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was probably magic.
You remember what it tasted like?
No.
Okay. I'm just trying to remember.
I don't know. I just remember that you had like melting crepes and shit, and I was like, I'm going to die. And you're like, trying to eat your melted crepes.
Like chocolate running down my hand as I'm trying to help you figure this out.
And I did not care. Okay, so I'd already gotten off birth control. And then we were also like, well, we want to have kids soon. 5 months later.
We got pregnant.
We got pregnant with Grayson, which was a blessing because I was going to see a doctor for endometriosis, which they wanted to put me on Lupron, which is a castration medication. And your mom was like, Kylie, just wait. And I was like, okay, well, I need to have a baby because I cannot have another period or I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got pregnant.
And we already found out what my next duty station in the Army would be. And it was
you were
that
gonna
I was
going
to deploy to Korea. And there was a lot of tension between
I
the
wanted
US and
your
Korea.
Legacy.
Yes. Well, that's kind of what like informed our decision. Then.
Well, isn't that when Korea was like getting funky?
Not yet. I mean, it was starting to, but not like.
Well,
because
our traumatic brains were like, we're thinking worst case scenario, you're going to die and I need a child.
I know, which was just so absurd to think. it was absurd, but that's how it happened.
But also because my periods were killing me and I was like, give me a child.
So 5 months after we get married.
I'm pregnant.
You're pregnant.
But I was only off of drugs for 3 months.
Well, we're skipping around now, though. We're skipping around.
No, okay. 3 months comes from 3 months of doing the diet.
I asked all the drugs that you were on.
I don't remember. I think it was citalopram for sure, Plaquenil, as needed prednisone, and
Xanax too.
Yeah.
As needed Xanax too.
Well, because that was for flying.
But you would take it outside of flying sometimes too. But the point is you're on all these.
I did?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't know. I think. I'm pretty sure you did.
Probably.
I don't know. But
I didn't know the dangers.
Yeah. Well, of course. Again, so this is our journey of waking up, so to speak, right? This like began the journey of waking up. And it was seeing you transform, you feeling yourself transform.
This is where the 3 months come from, because it took 3 months of doing a whole 30 diet, basically whole 30. And that's when I was like, okay, I feel really good for the first time in ever. And so
tapering off all your medications at the same time we were doing that.
Yeah. But to be honest, I tapered off of citalopram in a span of 3 days. And I do remember getting a really bad fight over the trash can for some damn reason. Well, because I was in withdrawal.
I don't remember that.
I don't know. It was something stupid, but.
Was it in that small apartment in Lawton, Oklahoma?
That had mushrooms.
That had mushrooms growing on the carpet.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised I didn't get sick at that place. Nasty. We rented it with furniture in it.
Can I tell a quick, like, funny story?
No, I'm scared. What?
When I just because it's funny. Like, it's funny. Remember when, Kylie knows this because she lives with me. Well, you do it too, where just something random will pop in our head, so we'll start singing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a mom, so that's.
Do you remember
the
story that I'm going to say right now?
No.
When I started singing, whoa.
No, stop. Don't even tell us. No.
It's funny. It's hilarious. So our neighbor's right across from us in Lawton, Oklahoma, in this apartment. It's funny. It's a funny story. Am I not allowed to say it on my own podcast?
I don't think you should.
It's not like bad. It's just funny. It was ironic.
All right.
Okay. I started singing, whoa, Black Betty, Bama Lam, just out of nowhere. And I'm singing it loud as I open the door. And I'm saying Black Betty. And our neighbor across from us, who's black, is walking out of her apartment. I make eye contact with her. And I felt so awkward.
Because it almost was almost like you were like, whoa, Black Betty.
Yeah, like singing to her. And that's what I thought.
Because you guys
exited
the building. Because, okay, our door faced their door.
Yeah.
And you guys both exited at the same time. And you kicked the door open because you had a box in your hand. And you go, whoa, Black Betty. And then I was like, I'm dying.
That was hilarious.
Thanks for adding that.
I don't know. That was
story.
Not part of the story.
It's fine.
Okay, so I had like the intrusive like white person thought too of like, oh no, like I have a lot of black friends that like popped in my head, and it's like wanted to show a picture of my childhood and who I grew up around. That's like immediately where my head went.
Here's my brother Nino.
Here's my brother. I have an adopted black brother. Like okay, anyway, so I witnessed you transform, totally transform in a matter of 3 months. And again, tapering off all your medications, you didn't taper it right. And if anyone listens to this, we highly recommend if you are on any sort of pharmaceuticals, get someone to help you taper rather than just doing it by yourself, especially when it comes to psychotropic medications. It can be very dangerous to just cut cold turkey off them. But in 3 months, just by adopting a very simple, natural approach to health, focusing on what we were eating, not even really focusing on mindfulness yet, but kind of starting to lean a little bit in that direction, like some emotional freedom technique things were starting to come into our awareness and things like this, but really more so focused on diet and just regularly working out, because that was...
Yeah, we didn't even really know about my environmental factors at this point as far as like lotions and candles, because I remember having toxic candles.
Still
up in
using
that.
Like Iris Spring soap or something like that.
Gross.
Yeah, gross. Disgusting. And toxic candles. And we were living in a just shitty
nasty
apartment
place.
In Lawton, Oklahoma. And I mean,
that was the first time.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. At this point, I wanted to go get follow up blood work because I felt so great that I was like, okay, I just want to see what I feel like. I mean, I want to see what I feel like. I want to have
confirmation.
Yes, that what I'm doing is working.
Yeah.
And I got my blood work back and my SED rates were at a 22, which was the lowest that they had been in like
9 years.
Yes.
And I just your diagnosis was around what, 2007, a year before, not your diagnosis, but your initial going to the doctor, 2006, 2007.
Yes.
Right. And that's when your inflammation levels were off the charts.
Yep.
And then now fast forward nine, almost 10 years. And they're normal for the first time ever.
Within 3 months. And I remember having that piece of paper and crying to you, being like, I did this.
Yeah.
and I wanted to say MFers.
Yeah.
I won't say it.
Well, what was so shocking, I'll speak for myself now. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it too, what's coming up for you, but was when we went to this rheumatologist just to get confirmation that your internal state, you were feeling better than you had ever felt. Your inflammation was gone. You had started to really resolve your toxicity, and just by eating naturally and no longer suppressing the symptoms, you were detoxifying really for the first time in nearly 10 years. So the inflammation wasn't necessary, because as we've come to understand, inflammation
has a purpose.
Exactly. It is there for a reason. It is a warning sign that you're something in your environment or something internally, more so psychosomatically or metaphysically is wrong that you need to deal with. Or like I said, something in your environment or something that you're consuming is causing inflammation, and the inflammation is there simply to help resolve that issue. And so you were covering that up for nearly 10 years and you started to detoxify and you're feeling incredible. And when we went to this doctor, I expected, really don't know what I expected, but I expected some level of intellectual curiosity in that you're presenting to him as someone who is no longer on any of the medications and you are feeling better than you've ever felt. Your inflammation levels have dropped to what would be considered normal. And there was no like, oh my goodness, tell me more. It was just like, okay, looks like you don't need me.
You grew out of it.
Yeah, you grew out of it. Is that what he said? You grew out of it.
Was this when I was pregnant with Grayson? Because
you weren't pregnant yet.
I don't remember where.
We went to a rheumatologist in Oklahoma. Yeah.
I just struggle to remember because so much has transpired over the past. Okay, so we talk about childhood trauma, and part two will honestly be about our adulthood trauma that we've been through.
Yeah.
Because
adult and child, we'll just talk about all of that stuff. Yeah. Lots of familial stuff, it's
really difficult to remember because there was so much going on. And I'm sure my structure of my brain was shifting because of how much drugs I was on neurochemically changed who I was.
Well, okay. So I'll just say that from my vantage point, I remember being like, what the hell?
Like, why doesn't he care?
Yeah. Like he didn't.
I kind of remember that. I remember our reaction more than so the doctor himself, but being like, okay. But he was probably just poo-pooed us off like, oh, well, whatever. On to the next.
Yeah, it was just so mind-blowing to see, though, because, again, you were under the care of multiple rheumatologists who were ostensibly experts on the body and health, and none of them ever mentioned this very simple approach that we started to take with respect to health that was having you feeling better than you had ever felt, and it was on no medications, zero medications.
I would like to know stats on how many physicians that are practicing their own medications themselves, because it made me think about how he was probably numbed out, you know? So maybe he didn't care because he was like, eh, whatever, on to the next. And it makes you think of, well, you're clearly numb because this is like people just coming in and out of here like clockwork. And it was still Army healthcare. And so, but for people who aren't familiar with Army healthcare, you pull a number and you get whatever doctor is available that moment. Yeah.
It's like the epitome of socialist healthcare.
And so, I don't know. I was just kind of making a mental note of like, well, he probably didn't care because he was probably on drugs. Not saying everybody on drugs is numb. I think there's a time and a place for emergency medicine when it is needed.
Yeah, but I'm talking like emergency situation where some dude is like freaking the F out.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't want anybody to think I'm trying to shame anybody. Yeah, right. I'm sure there's circumstances where, anyways, yeah.
Yeah. So then now we're on this journey of holistic health, and this is where we both begin going down the rabbit hole and everything. So it started really.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I was going to say, I brought you onto the vaccine train.
Totally, you did. I totally acknowledge that. But you piqued my interest. I remember the first thing that I did, it was just looking at the ingredients of some of the vaccines. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
This is what's injected into
our bodies? I didn't even know what
an
insert was.
Yeah.
Somebody was like, do you want me to send you? Because this is when I was pregnant with Grayson, our son, which by the grace of God, and this is how I know it was divine intervention, because with how bad my periods were and endometriosis like symptoms, I shouldn't have gotten pregnant the first time like that.
And it was literally the first time.
It was literally the first time. The very first time. But also everything surrounding his birth, like his data, like time of birth.
I don't
want
to say the time though, because I use that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Like for personal stuff. But yes.
My point is everything surrounding his birth time, his birth weight, his birth date, everything with that was totally aligned with our life already. Mm-hmm. Like he was born on our anniversary of when we started dating.
Yeah. August 25th is mm-hmm. when we started dating in 2008.
Yeah.
And he was born on August 25th, 2017. His birth time, I'm not going to say, because
that has been
my passcode for my entire life.
For a year, like decades before.
For decades before. And then his birth weight
was our wedding date. 6'11".
Yeah, it was just so crazy seeing all that.
His birth was really rough, and I'm sure we'll get into that.
That's a perfect segue into that. But before we get to the differences in your birth stories, let's talk about how we started going down this rabbit hole mm-hmm. of vaccines, and we sort of thought that that was the only thing that was flawed with the paradigm of pediatrics in birth.
Well, conditioning runs deep.
Yeah.
Because I still outsourced to doctors at that time mm-hmm. but that's because it was no longer just about me.
Yeah.
And they put the fear of God in me about Grayson having some sort of issue because of my history of lupus. There's a specific marker that they look for when you're pregnant called the SSA or Rho antibody.
Yeah.
And I was positive for it, and it has a potential to cross the placenta and cause congenital heart block.
Which we don't know if any of that's true, especially with what we know about antibodies now. It's like nonsense. But the point is, at the time, that's what we believed. We didn't know what we know now.
Right. But because of that, I was, one, terrified. And so I got sonograms probably every other week, but at a period of time within the pregnancy, every week. I was uneducated about that. Mm. And I was that was with the internal fetal medicine doctor, which I thought I still needed, that I needed all of this extra care. And again, I was a new mom. It didn't even occur to me that the birth world was just as corrupt as the rest of the medical industry.
And we were just learning about the corruption of the medical industry. So we had no wherewithal to know any of this stuff. Again, we just thought it was vaccines. That's
it. We were like, well, and we were still afraid that, okay, well, I hope he doesn't get sick, but I know I don't want to vaccinate him.
Yeah.
And
we were so scared of having him around people when he was first born.
Well, and then we went up to New York to visit West Point, and that's when the first measles outbreak happened, and we were actually in the place where they didn't want anybody to go because of measles. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, if especially they were like, no unvaccinated children allowed in here,
we're like,
so we were
oh,
like, oh
shit.
My god,
we thought we had like an energetic target on our backs.
Yeah, we were so freaked out. But back up to now your birth story. So with our son, when you were pregnant with him, there was sonograms like once a week for most of the pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
and then you were also, quote, strep B positive towards the very end.
Well, I also had hyperemesis, which is when you throw up from sunup to sundown and you don't get a break.
You lost like 20 pounds.
Yeah. In the first
trimester. And you were already like skinny.
I was dying.
Yeah.
I thought I was dying. So that was really difficult. So I took what was called Diclegis to help with that. That was the only way that I could semi keep food down. Well, and the concern at that point was water and fluids. But anyways, towards the end of the pregnancy, I didn't really think of, I didn't think a C-section would happen to me because it just wasn't in my realm of possibility. And I wasn't educated that birth could go wrong. Like I was so young, I thought I would go in there and I would have my baby and I'd pull him up and have him on my chest and it was going to be that. Like I never, despite of like knowing birth would be painful because of all of the outside propaganda of what birth looks like in the media, I knew it was going to be painful. So I wasn't against having an epidural or any of that because I was like, well, yeah, birth is painful. That's what's to be expected.
And everything else too.
Well, let me walk you through what happened as if you weren't there.
Well, I mean, I'm asking you questions that I already know the answer to.
I know.
This isn't
yeah,
for
that's
me.
True.
So yes, please walk
so what
me
do you
through.
Know?
So please walk me through what happened.
Well, okay, we had just moved into our new townhouse because the house we were living in literally smelled like shit. Do you remember the toxic gas leak?
Oh yeah.
So oh, that God. Was stressful. I was 38 weeks and my water broke early and I was positive for strep B. And so they were like, oh, you need to come in immediately because that increases your risk of infection and you need to be put on antibiotics. And I was like, oh God, okay. So I went in. I really wanted a waffle as my last meal before going in, but I settled with
last
Wendy's.
Supper.
It's nasty. For them to tell you that you can't eat while you're in labor is just...
There's so
Beyond
many things
me.
About
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah, that's a whole nother thing. But so we show up and I'm not contracting or anything, but my water had broken. And so they're like, well, let's go ahead and hook you up to an IV, give you your antibiotics.
Can we talk about your water breaking real quick too, though? Because do you remember that? I was like...
Okay, so we got into our house and I'm moving a box and
you
the movers
have been
were there.
Shit. Yeah.
I know, but the movers were
but
there
you were
that
really,
day.
You were just like setting some small
I,
things up. You
I think
like,
it was like a laundry basket yeah, or something. Something
yeah.
light.
Yeah.
But the movers were there that day. So none of our shit was put away. And I'm walking over and I'm wearing Nike pants, Nike shorts. And all of a sudden it was like a gush and you were wearing your underwear and you came in and I go, Alec? And you're like, did you pee? And I'm like, no, my water broke. And you're like, oh, okay. Okay. And then you start unboxing things. And I'm like, no, pack a bag for the hospital.
This is like the stereotypical meme where like, the wife says, hey, we're having friends come over. We need to clean the house.
And you go and fold socks.
I go like fold socks.
Or fix
like,
the bed that's been broken
like,
for 6 months.
Mow the lawn or do some very obscure thing. That
yeah,
has
you still
nothing.
Do that. To this day.
Point. That's just like a
But you're
a
like,
dude.
Okay, I got to make sure our house is set up for our baby. So I'm going to go unbox this box of books. And I'm like, no, you need to pack a bag
but
for
I,
the
like,
hospital.
But I started freaking out doing it. Like, oh my God, yeah. I need to do this much quicker now. The house needs to be set up right now.
Well, and I didn't know that when your fluids break that it just kind of leaks mm-hmm. until it's done. And so I'm standing there waiting in the shower. I'm like, I'm just waiting for this to stop. And they're like, well, it's not really going to stop. So you might as well just come in. And so you called my mom and you said, it's time. And she was all the way in Colorado. So it was going to be a while, but we go into the hospital and my water had broken. They hooked me up to antibiotics because I was strep B positive. Didn't know I had a choice. And then they hooked me up to Pitocin and I was maxed out on Pitocin for 13 hours and I was stuck out of three. And at this point they didn't want to allow me to have an epidural because they're like, we just don't want it to stall. And I'm like, I've been stalled at a three for 13 hours mm-hmm. for the love. And Pitocin is not the same type of contraction as a regular, authentic, real contraction pressure wave. For my hypno babies.
We have another episode coming up soon with a doula, so I'm not going to get into all the details on the problems with Pitocin and epidurals and even non-emergency C-sections and things like this. That'll be covered another time. But so you're on Pitocin, you had an epidural, and...
They didn't give me an epidural at this point, but finally they had a shift in doctors happened. And my medwife came in. I called her a medwife.
Yeah, your medwife. Oh, and did you really say that on purpose?
Just now, yeah. A medwife instead of midwife.
Did you make that up or is that a thing?
No, it's a thing.
Oh, okay.
It's like when they say that they're midwives, but they're more
they're literally
medwives.
Just, yeah.
But she came in. I did love her. She was great. You know, she's operating out of what?
Totally. I mean, most doctors, nurses, scientists,
right.
et cetera, are good people who have just been misled.
Right. And yeah. So... I finally got an epidural, which was taking over an hour and a half to get in. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like they couldn't.
And you're in
right
a ton of pain.
Oh my gosh. Well, because yeah. I had contract every single time. Yeah. And then, so I finally got that, took a nap and then, or slept for so many hours and then woke up and I was fully dilated and ready to push. Mm-hmm. And then I was in every position you could think of and he was not coming down. And in retrospect, there's so many things that I wish I had known to prepare for a birth. First off, I did no movement throughout the entire pregnancy until like the last couple weeks I started walking. But one, I was really, really sick. And two, I was so in much fear about hurting my baby. I just wasn't educated on the woman's body.
Especially because you were still considered, quote, high risk.
Yeah.
Because you had just resolved, quote, autoimmune illnesses.
Yep.
And because we didn't know what we know now, mm-hmm. you received the diagnosis that you had the Rho antibody. Mm-hmm. So because you were positive for this antibody that put the fear of God in you that, oh my God, my baby might not survive this pregnancy.
Yeah.
So
well, I literally thought if I
careful.
Moved, I would detach the placenta and something would happen.
Like, well, this is just another example though of how having a label, right? Mm-hmm. A diagnosis can put you in
the effect.
Yeah. It's a cascading effect of you literally creating the conditions yourself for something to happen, but you also taking steps related to that diagnosis
yep.
that are not in your best interest, but you don't know. Again,
right.
You don't know what
yeah.
you don't know at that time.
Yeah. And it all serves its purpose. And, you know, Grayson.
Our son. Yeah.
I can't even talk about him without crying. But, you know, he's our biggest gift and mm-hmm. lesson.
Yeah.
So his birth was pretty rough. excuse me. And so went into a C-section after 2.5 hours of pushing. And finally went into C-section and the anesthesiologist was like, you're not going to act like this in my OR.
To you.
Yeah. Because they had turned off my epidural because they thought, oh, she can't feel pushing. So let's turn it off because he wasn't coming down. And the pediatrician there was called me a stupid woman because I knew I wanted skin to skin contact like immediately. I didn't know anything, but I knew that, mm-hmm. that I wanted skin to skin, that was important to me. And they were so worried about his heart being something wrong with him that they like wanted to whisk him away immediately. And I said, no. And they're like, stupid woman.
Yeah.
And I remember your dad being upset by that. There was so much shit happening that day anyway.
Well, the other thing that's big on the C-section is that you were also, quote, strep B positive. So you're on a ton of antibiotics mm-hmm. up until the time of his birth.
Yeah. Multiple rounds, I'm sure.
Yeah. So not only was his microbiome depleted that way, but mm-hmm. then he also didn't get the initial
the
microbial, floral input.
From the vaginal mm-hmm. canal. Yeah.
And we bring that up because we're going to talk about the second birth and then also the differences at first between, don't get me wrong, like our son is brilliant, but we do see a little bit of emotional dysregulation and sort of nervousness about him that is not seen as much in our daughter.
We can get into that.
Yeah.
I'll finish this.
Yeah.
This
sorry.
Part.
I didn't mean to speak over you.
No, you're good. You do that all the time. I'm just kidding.
Damn.
<I'm> just kidding.
No, I don't.
I know. You really don't. You're no. great. It was just a joke. I will say I do joke with you a lot. Like, I'm trying to think of the word. What's the word?
Make fun of me?
I guess.
Yeah.
Do I?
No. I mean, yes, but like.
Roast you a lot.
You roast me a lot.
But it's so much fun.
It is
fun. But we both laugh.
We both roast each other.
We do.
Yeah.
But if you're not roasting your spouse, you're not having fun.
I know.
But in a loving way.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Grayson's birth, everything surrounding that was really impactful for a number of reasons. So the people surrounding me were not really on my team. It was a domino effect. I'm pretty sure that's what they call it. Like a domino effect of, you know, having... I mean, his water broke too soon. I didn't know what I was doing, so I didn't prepare for him to be in a good position. I wasn't sitting on my ball regularly. I wasn't helping him, you know, but I was also only 38 weeks, so I should have had more time.
I also didn't know anything about just in general mindfulness
right.
and the power of our mind, right?
Yeah.
But specifically not so related to birth, because that's what we found later on
mm-hmm.
when you were pregnant with our second. So we'll get to that later, because we still have to sort of show this trend of our journey mm-hmm. because it all plays into your story. Because then, you know, when Grayson was around 2.5, we then moved to Oklahoma again. I got stationed in Oklahoma, and that's when you started to present with symptoms again. But continue with the birth stuff, and then we'll get to there. I was just setting the context for people listening or watching of why we're discussing this.
I mean, it was really, really hard. I walked out of there, and I'm wheelchaired out of there. I don't remember, but feeling so defeated, feeling like I failed. Because I know I didn't want a C-section. And what's horrible is that, like, I know I had drilled into your brain, like, I don't want a C-section. I don't want a C-section. I don't want a C-section. And when it was that time to, like, go and get one, I looked to you like, is this okay? You're like, I don't really know.
Yeah.
And we were babies. Yeah. We were so young.
I was 25 when he was born. Yeah, I just turned 25. You were 25.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we didn't know. And anyways, It was really hard, and then the postpartum period was also really difficult because my anxiety was just insane.
Mm.
But also there was a lot of family stuff that was happening back then. A lot of
family stuff, like, which we'll cover on another episode because that's like a lot to get into as well. But it relates to where this is all going to tie in with respect to symptoms and all the things of how much we've come to understand emotions playing probably the biggest impact on our health. But we'll cover that in another episode. But after Grayson's birth, again, we're on this holistic health journey, and overwhelmingly you are feeling better than you had ever felt before. And you still do, by the way. Like, I remember there was days you wouldn't get out of bed and things like this. It was crazy when you were, quote, you had lupus and rheumatoid arthritis in air quotes. But so then fast forward to 2019. I'm going to my next duty station in the Army. And at this point, we had done all of our research on the pharmaceutical industry. We had done all of our research on the U.S. government for the most part. And I was in the Army.
Yeah. Yes. And no. I mean, we didn't know how deep it was.
Yeah. But I meant,
because this is right before COVID.
Like 9/11, though, we knew was bullshit, that narrative. And I would say, like, neither of us have ever voted. Neither of us have ever voted. There's a little inside joke there. Yeah. But neither of us have ever voted. And
I really haven't.
Yeah. I know. But we were still on this journey of awakening. So 2019 comes, and Kylie had been symptom free from her autoimmune symptoms for now
3 years,
three and a half years,
2016 to 2019.
Yeah, three and a half years roughly.
But my intuition started to get really refined, especially after having Grayson, because, you know, mother's intuition, it totally just really ignited.
And you started waking up to the problems with the birth world at that point too. There's so many different rabbit holes we were going down.
Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened. But right before COVID happened, when we moved in that house on Post, I got extremely ill. Yeah. And so all my symptoms came back raging, but even more so with like neurological symptoms where I was having like a miniature stroke. And we had my friend Meg come over, and she was like doing a stroke analysis on me to make sure.
I legitimately thought you had a stroke. I'm not kidding.
It was pretty bad.
I was sitting on the couch with Grayson, I think, and you
came out of the, it was like the house was so small, but it was a duplex.
Built in the 1910s. Or 1920s.
Yeah, actually 1930s, sorry.
Okay, 1910, but 1930.
Still, old as shit. And I knew something was wrong with the house, but they
metaphysically and physically, by the way.
This is true, yeah. And I had saged that house several times. But so there was mold. There was visible mold in the house, and I was raising the alarms, and every time the housing company would come over, they're like, oh, just allergies, you're good. But I was so debilitated with fatigue that I had a chair in front of the stove cooking my dinner with sitting at the stove, because I was like, I can't stand, I can't do anything. And Kimberly, my sister, says, she was living in Belgium at the time, and so when we would be able to talk, she's like, I remember you couldn't even form sentences. You'd be too exhausted to talk. It wasn't right. I wasn't right. This, and I knew something was going on. And I was like, okay, there's mold in this house, but I know there's more mold than we can see. And at the same time that I'm being, I'm essentially unraveling, COVID hits. And then we were in fear because I was already susceptible. Like, yeah. We're looking at each other like, oh shit, I can die.
Yeah.
Because I'm already so sick. And we were in the process of moving out of the house. We were house shopping. We thought, okay, we're not even going to be able to get a new house because COVID, and nobody's going to want to move us. We're not even going to be able to get movers. Did we move ourselves? Yeah, we did.
We did.
Because we had to essentially figure out our whole furniture and how to take care of all that because of the mold, mm-hmm. which we didn't have confirmation of the black mold until we had moved out and they took apart our HVAC and it was all saturated.
Yeah. And that's when it kind of hit us right as we're just beginning to understand terrain. Because we move into this house, the first house where your symptoms started coming back just before COVID. We were like, what the hell is going on? We couldn't figure it out because we were like, we're not doing anything different.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing
has
changed.
Eating the same type of food.
Eating the same stuff. You're moving your body. Your symptoms started to come back though. And then Grayson started to get sick a little bit too. Yeah. Just like, he had never been sick. So we were already operating at this point, 2.5 years later after he was born, from the position that if you get sick with a quote virus, it's not going to affect you as bad because of your terrain. So we were still operating from the, what I would consider to be the traditional terrain theory approach of, oh, okay, as long as you take care of your internal terrain, then these pathogens won't impact you as bad. So we're already so unafraid that he would get sick. We'd let him lick stuff at playgrounds. Like, mm-hmm. we were not concerned with that. And he never used to get sick.
Mm-mm.
And then at this point he started to get sick. And as we're moving out, we were coming from the perspective that there was a man-made thing coming from mm-hmm. China that was going to just wreak havoc on the entire world. That's what both you and I were thinking at the time.
Yeah, we were. But I did intuitively, for some reason, I was like, we need detox from heavy metals. And we need to, I was freaking out about the 5G towers. I'm like,
you were, we watched them go up. We literally watched them go up throughout the first few months.
We were in Oklahoma and a lot of people didn't give a shit about COVID there. So luckily we didn't really have to play the game as much.
Yeah.
We were in fear, not going to lie.
Totally.
And there were still people there that would like, of course, scold you in public if you weren't wearing a mask.
Yeah.
But we, relative to other parts of the country, or the world for that matter, we didn't have it as bad as far as like COVID
measures. In terms of the measures, not near as bad. But again, relative to the rest of Oklahoma, maybe a little bit worse because we were on a military installation at the time, right? And I was working on one.
Yeah. You had like absurd things like no running outside.
Yeah, and no running. We didn't go to work for 3.5 weeks. Remember, we worked from home and went on Zoom. That's all we did when I was at Captain's Career Course in the Army.
Yeah.
And just prior to this, I was pretty sure I wanted to get out of the Army because I knew what the government was about, but I was mm-hmm. still sort of operating from the perspective that, you know what, I can justify staying in as long as I don't have a job where I'm going
combat.
To be in combat or directly related to combat. I was going to go to like acquisitions corps within the Army or something mm-hmm. like that. But then this happened
in
2020.
Like,
this is going to be
about a vaccine and you're out.
We're out of here.
We're getting out of here.
Yeah, exactly. We knew it was going to be about mandatory vaccines.
Yeah.
And that's why I made that video in like February of 2020 or whatever. But we had no clue that there was not actually any physical material threat whatsoever. We were still afraid of this like man-made quote.
Yeah, well, I remember watching all the videos of people falling over in China and being scared as hell. And then also mm-hmm. that's when you started listening to like David Icke stuff and like all these layers were being pulled off and I was like, la 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 la, I can't. This is too much for at one time. I can't.
Well, you were just coming off of being like super sick too. That's the crazy thing. So all that to say, we move out of that toxic house, which, by the way, we've come to the position that the mold is not the issue in that case. It's not the mold that's the issue. It's that the mold is consuming toxic building materials. One of the toxic building materials that we had to sign a waiver for in that house, by the way,
was lead.
Encapsulated lead paint.
Yeah.
So here's this old, rickety old ass, like 1930s home that they've just like jimmy rigged together with multiple layers of God knows what.
Because it was part of the historical society. So there's only so much they can do.
Totally. But again, it's also army housing and they don't give two shits.
I'm just saying, don't get me started on that whole situation.
Oh my God.
I'm very heated about it still.
Yeah. I remember I was a first lieutenant when we were living in that. I was just about to become a captain in the army and I got into like a verbal argument with a garrison commander who is a full bird colonel. Like, remember we sat down with him.
I was dying.
Yeah,
I was literally
crazy.
Dying. And they were talking about moving somebody in that next week. And I'm like, you don't understand.
And they did not show any empathy whatsoever for our situation.
No,
for you being
and
sick.
Because
Zero.
Because they know if we were to blow the lid off that entire situation, it would have been millions and millions and millions of dollars of a lawsuit.
Yeah, totally. Especially
for
because
so
we started getting other families that were on the installation to test their homes.
Because it was a conspiracy.
Yeah. It literally was a conspiracy. But that's a notoriously an issue in army housing. And again, people think that mold is the issue and mold proliferation is just a byproduct of the toxic building materials with poor air ventilation. Again, mold in nature isn't causing any issues. It's there to consume materials and return them back to the earth, right? It's there to consume dead material and return it back to the earth. It's that there was toxic building materials inside this home. But all that to say, we move out and we do a detox.
For 3 months,
3 months, no, it was like a 9-day detox.
Yeah, well, I was still doing like TRS and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, yeah. We were doing a few different detox.
Background knowledge or little tidbit, we were trying to get pregnant while we were living in that mold house, which I don't know why, because I was dying. I'm like, I'm dying, but I want a baby.
Yeah, I don't know why we were like, either.
But, you know, God was looking out for me and they were like, not yet, not yet. Mm. And so 3 months out of moving out, I get pregnant with Charlie. Plus, I learned a little bit more about cycle and I knew how to track my cycle at that point.
But before we go into Charlie's story, because that is such a redeeming story and it's another act of you defying the diagnosis, medical. Right? Defying the medical, I don't know what to call it. I'm thinking of like
complex.
The episode title too, because that's like what the story is. That's what you've done your whole life. This is where we started looking into terrain as we have come to know it now, because I came across, both you and I were watching David Icke being interviewed on London Real and he made reference to Dr. Andy Kaufman. So we started looking into.
Is that where you heard him?
Yeah.
But what's crazy is though, I had Tom Cowan's book about autoimmunity and vaccines or something.
Yeah.
One of his books.
Vaccines, autoimmunity and changing the nature of childhood disease.
And before, damn, I'm just thinking of how intuitive we actually are, because before we had even moved to Oklahoma, we were still in the first house when I was pregnant with Grayson before I had him. I was printing vaccine material off the internet and I said, I'm doing this before they scrub it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was in Manhattan. That was in 2017.
Yes. I said,
how did we know that?
I was creating a binder because I don't know, our trauma brains, or because we were intuitive and I was like, I'm starting to
Well, they
to
were starting
this.
To ramp up at that point in time, right? As we were coming to learn. Yeah.
Shit.
They were starting to ramp up their demeanor, like demeaning and mocking and shaming in mainstream media of anti-vaxxers. So I think
that's why.
I don't remember.
But I still remember printing those things off and having Tom Cowan's book.
Yeah.
And starting to read it.
Yeah.
And then now you're friends with him.
Yeah. It's so crazy coming full circle. But so we see David Icke being interviewed by Brian Rose on London Real.
I literally could not listen to that though.
But this is a key point in the story, because he made reference to Dr. Andy Kaufman. And then I also came across a video of Dr. Cowan talking about following a pod of dolphins or something like that off the coast of Florida.
Yeah.
And if they were to get sick, and our own lived experience was reflecting that. Again, we thought mold was the problem at the time, but had we couldn't figure out what was wrong with you. Right. And then we find the mold. Right. And then we're like, oh my God, it wasn't any virus, because that's what we were still operating under that at that time. It was simply just the environment creating the conditions for you to feel this way. We were already big on nutrition, but we hadn't really looked into the environment yet, right. Like things in our environment and toxins that are causing illness, but our own lived experiences were reflecting the terrain-based approach.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started really looking into the no virus position.
It was like rapid awakening at that point. Where we're like, holy shit.
And then we started seeing gain of function for what it was. And we're like, oh my goodness, this is a huge psyop intended to scare us.
But then you became super passionate, and then the birth of the way forward and simultaneously
Health Freedom for Humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the HFFH. I couldn't think of the words.
Letters. The acronym, right?
But those were birthed when you were still in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And that was stressful because it was like you were living a double life, because you'd go to work and then come home and do a podcast and be like, okay, but I don't want to get in trouble.
And
with
like
the Army.
My boss knew I was into holistic health, because I was like, yeah, my wife resolved some autoimmune diseases naturally. So we're really into health and fitness, but yeah. I don't think he knew that. But
to the extent,
again, that's another time we can go off on way too many tangents. Let's
put a pin in that conversation because so much happened in that house that played into how I am today.
Yeah. So there's so many stressful situations that played in, just so many things.
We lived next to meth heads. Stress.
Yeah, we lived next to meth dealers, literally, when we moved off of the military installation. But so then we detox. We detoxify. I do it with you because we're, you know, worried that I was exposed to all that stuff too. And it made sense that I wasn't experiencing symptoms like you and our son were, because I wasn't in the house as much during the day. I was at work most of the time. But we start detoxifying, and we had been struggling to get pregnant now for a long time. And I think it was literally a year of us trying to get pregnant. It was a year of us trying to get pregnant. We detoxify. You're starting to feel great again.
And I get pregnant.
And then we get pregnant. And it was just like an incredible example of terrain. It was really cool. I still remember you were like trying to hide it from me.
Because it was a few days away from Father's Day.
Yeah.
And we're like packing to go
Father's
home.
Father's Day 2020. Yeah,
Father's Day 2020. We're packing to go home, and I'm like, you come in, and I'm just like...
Packing to go back to Kansas City when you say go home.
Yeah, sorry. And I just have like this big smile on my face, and you're like, what? And I'm like, nothing, because I can't even hide my smile. And I wanted to film you because it was the cutest reaction, because we had been trying for so long. And then I walked to the bathroom to get the stick that I peed on, and then you're like, you're pregnant! And it was just the cutest, most authentic cry.
Yeah.
It was cute.
It was super cute. And then this part of the story is really cool too. So that was our intro into terrain. That whole experience, we're like, oh my God, this totally makes intuitive sense. That's why you were sick. The environment, not because of some quote virus or bacteria or anything like that.
So let me get into about the pregnancy or about the birth, because halfway through the birth, actually, I was 18 weeks when I changed providers. So I made it through 18 weeks of seeing a traditional OBGYN. Actually, she was a DO. So I thought
it'd be more natural leaning.
Yeah. Well, because I saw that and heard/read on Oklahoma Mom's page, like Natural Mom's page, that they honored VBACs, where not a lot of practitioners will do that. There's some women in the South who will drive across a border to have a VBAC.
Term real quick for before we proceed. VBAC means vaginal birth after cesarean, for those who are unfamiliar with what that term means. Meaning after you've had a C-section, you're wanting to try for just a natural vaginal birth.
So I was seeing her, and I had a friend who had just had one of her babies at the time at a birthing center in Oklahoma or in Texas, right across the border. So technically I did go across the border to have my baby.
Yeah.
But she was like, oh, Kylie, I just want you to just check this place out. And I don't want to step on your toes, but this place is just so magical. And at that point, I was still in such a place of fear that I'm like, well, what if I fail? What if I fail at this birth? What if I can't do it and I have to have another C-section? So then I went back to the OBGYN in Oklahoma City and I said, I need to know your stats and I need to know what it looks like for you to have a gentle C-section. And she came back with all these things and she goes, just so you know, statistically speaking, you're going to end back up in a C-section.
Yeah, which is
just
really
just by looking at your medical history. And I was like, and in my mind, I was like, we're done.
But it was really cool because this was you really stepping into, we had already done all this research on the problems with the medical industry at this point, but
this is where the birth right. was really starting to.
Because there was still a piece of us that was like, oh, she's saying this, and that brought up cognitive dissonance in us. Like, oh my goodness. I mean, she's an OBGYN. She's the expert. She knows better. But then there's such a strong pull for both of us, and especially you, that like, no, this is not the right way to do it. So despite her saying that, hey, statistically speaking, you're going to end up back in C-section, et cetera,
I just couldn't hear it.
I was like, no,
I can't hear that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the fire side in me, the Sagittarius, where I was like, you're not going to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Might have a little problem with that.
Just a little bit. Just a tiny bit.
But I still, for some reason, was still seeing the internal fetal medicine doctor, though. I don't know why. Maybe I was still just like, checks and balances. I wanted to. Or maybe my midwife was like, you still need to get some.
We were still waking up to like autoimmunity and what that even is and antibodies. Right. So we still at this point were buying into antibody tests being real.
So I wanted to make sure that this pregnancy was going as it should, progressing okay. And so I was still getting some sonograms, but nothing in comparison. My gosh, I just remembered the fact that we thought I was miscarrying her at 12 weeks.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that was really traumatic.
Yeah.
There's multiple points.
Yeah. Anyways, we put a pin in that one. Table that for later. Add it to the list. But anyway, so fast forward to 38 weeks or something like that. I'm seeing the internal fetal medicine doctor for the last time. A man. Sorry.
No.
And I'm not like a crazy feminist or like, fuck men.
No.
Not also was wearing a pin that said I was vaccinated.
Yeah.
Had a mask on.
This is by January when the vaccine had just come out because it was January 2021.
And you could not go in the appointment with me, which I was like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
So I was already mad about that. And so I'm sitting there across from him like I am with you now. And he's like, so we recommend you be induced. And because he was under the impression that he was just like the supplemental internal fetal medicine doctor, but not my delivery doctor, I guess you'd say, or whoever was going to help assist with that. He's like, we recommend that you be induced by 39 weeks because blah, 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 whatever, stat here, stat there, whatever. And then I proceeded to tell him that I actually am going to go into birth, or I'm going to allow my body to do what it needs to do. And he is like, you mean spontaneously go into birth? And I remember being in my head like, yeah, like women have been doing that for thousands of years. And he was just like looking at me like, you know that this could be extremely catastrophic for you.
This was in person. And then they called as well. Remember, they called us.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
No.
They called us too. They also called us on the phone and said, hey, this is, we recommend you be induced. This is not going to be a good idea for you. This could be catastrophic.
Probably. I do remember him saying face to face, this is going to be catastrophic for you.
Right. And if so, because at this point we had already been 10, 15 weeks of no longer seeing the OBGYN, but because we were still a little bit concerned, we were still seeing this, quote, expert elsewhere. And that's this man, right?
Meanwhile,
at the birthing center on the other side.
I had a midwife that was tracking everything
I wanted. When we say birthing center, we're talking like it's a house.
Yeah,
like,
it was a house.
It's a house with
It
two,
wasn't like medicalized at all.
No.
And I mean, yes, there were certain things that were there for checks and balances just in case of emergency situations. But like I was extremely dehydrated because I shockingly didn't have enough water to drink. It's not like me at all. But so I had to have an IV and I was okay with that. I gave consent to that because I was like, I'm dying and I don't want anything on my mouth.
Yeah.
Unless
so
it was apple juice.
Before we get to that though, again, this guy that's this OBGYN is telling you over and over again that this is going to be catastrophic. This is a horrible idea. This could be fatal for you or for your baby, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, he was putting all of this shit into my mind. And I was so pissed because I didn't arm myself with the bubble of peace.
Yeah.
For those of you that are familiar with HypnoBabies, which is amazing. And I recommend HypnoBabies. I don't know HypnoBirthing. I know it's similar, but it's different. But I love it because it's extremely comprehensive, educational. Like, you learn everything about Pitocin, epidurals, the risks, or not really any benefits. I don't know. You don't feel things, but it's so comprehensive and it's educational piece that I love it. And it also explains what a bubble of peace is that you energetically surround yourself with a bubble of peace where all of this negative talk, because for some reason, whenever a woman is pregnant, people flock to you and love to tell you their horror stories about birth or pregnancy trauma. And it's just like, why? But so I wish I would have had my bubble of peace, you know, all zipped up and figured out. I do remember being like, no, you're not going to say this shit to me, because I was still very, very much convicted in my decision that it was going to be that way and that you weren't going to take it away from me, not you, but the guy. Mm. And so I was like, okay, well, yeah, I'm pretty confident and this is what I want. This is what's going to happen. My plan B is that there's a hospital down the street should I need it, but I think I'll be okay. And I left that situation being so mad, like feeling degraded and just, no, I'm doing this and you're not going to stop me. And you know, I was so pissed. And here's the difference between having a provider that believes in you and having somebody that can just negatively impact you. So he was that way. And then my midwife, a week before I actually went into labor with Charlie, it was 40 weeks and 2 days when I went into labor with her. But a week prior was that one major ice storm.
Yeah,
that happened in Texas. And she calls me and she goes, hey, I just want to let you know that we typically, they close down the roads, but just grab a whole bunch of towels and you're going to do great. Basically saying, I'm confident in you to have your baby at home.
By myself. Yeah.
She was like, just get a whole bunch of towels. You're going to do great. And I was like, I'm so glad that you believe in me that much. But at that time, I wasn't ready because it was going to be my first VBAC, my first real vaginal birth after the C-section, that traumatic birth. But that confidence she had in me was like, okay, I can do this. I'm not going to do this at home, but I'm going
to
do this.
But if I have to, because of the snowstorm, I will.
I might. I'll just be all right.
Yeah.
And she's like, and then you can just call 911 afterwards if you need to. I was like, oh my God. But how empowering, though.
How empowering.
I know.
It's so diametrically opposed to how that guy was.
I had to make that point because just the tone of like, this is going to be catastrophic for you versus just get some towels. You got this.
It just shows the distinct difference. It's a perfect example of the distinct difference between the allopathic medical paradigm where this guy is saying, I know better than you. Here's these random statistics that we've manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know more about your body than
I do. Birth is a medical procedure.
Birth is a medical procedure. Putting all this fear in you as they do. Whereas the more natural approach with this birthing center, again, that is just a house.
Is allowing it to progress exactly how it's supposed to. And
yeah,
I know that there's circumstances that are different from mine that are not, that don't go as beautiful as mine went. But I'm speaking from my own experience here that how beautiful that was that we got to experience that. For me, that was probably one of the best, most empowering moments of my entire life because I was like, I did that. Actually,
can I share from my perspective? Yeah, it was so cute. So again, you had been doing HypnoBabies and that had been huge for you. We had already started to learn about mindfulness and trauma as it relates to health and disease. So we were much more, I guess you could say, embodied with our health more than just the physical side of things at this point. And, you know, there's still some more things there. But seeing you after having been told by this, quote, expert, that this was going to be catastrophic. You're making a potentially fatal decision. There's no way this is going to work. And even previous to that, the other OBGYN saying, statistically speaking, this is going to end up in a C-section again. Mm-hmm. For you to pull our daughter out on your own from the water in a bathtub, look at her, then turn over and look at me and just go, I did it. It was like the cutest. And it's cool that you just mentioned on a little bit ago on this episode that when we went to your rheumatologist the first time after you had started feeling better. And
I did
this. Yeah, you said, yeah. I did this. And it was just such another cool example of you just completely defeating the quote odds and doing, trusting your body and trusting yourself to do exactly what it was designed to do. And it was so empowering for me to witness. So I know, and you've shared obviously, how empowering it was for you too.
Yeah. Thank you for making that connection, because I forget that, you know, I just kind of persevered through all of that. And it's just really empowering when you can remember that you do have the power within yourself to do those things. And support is everything. Mm. So I couldn't have done it without you.
And Lenora.
And Lenora, and my Lenora. Fairy godmother midwife.
So let's highlight real quick all the support that you had, but also all the things that we did to get you to both those points. Again, so going back to the very beginning at this journey, tapered off all of your medications, mm-hmm. and just started adopting a natural approach to health, which a very strict Whole 30 diet at that time. And mm-hmm. I think diet is all unique to the individual. And I again think it's more emotional than anything, but for the sake of this episode, we're not going to cover all the emotional pieces in this one. We'll do that on a part two sometime. Mm-hmm. But for you, it was Whole 30, and that very strict, kind of strict version of paleo helped mm-hmm. to detoxify you and mm-hmm. give your body the adequate nutrition that it needed.
Eliminated a lot of inflammatory inducing things.
Right. In order to heal, in order to heal and feel good for the first time.
And then I started doing other things to help detox as well. I just want to add that I started going to the sauna, moving my body. I did castor oil packs before I got pregnant on my midsection or pelvic region, and just really learned about detoxing. And I think now more than ever, it's important to really know the right way to support your body through detoxification, making sure your pathways of elimination are open and ready, and supporting yourself with minerals and not making sure you're not malnourished. That's a huge thing. Feeding yourself the right foods, feeding yourself, period, because that's something I've had to learn the hard way recently, that as a trauma response, I would just stop eating, not because I was trying to control the situation, but because I couldn't feel when I was hungry or I was overcompensating with coffee, which is, you know, fast forward to now, I would tell you that your health journey is not necessarily going to be a point, and this is not for everyone, I'm just speaking from my experience, it's not going to be a place where you finally have arrived and it's going to be done. Just like life is always moving, you are always moving and always adapting. There's going to be things that are thrown at you. They are coming at us at every angle. And that's not just toxin-wise. That's also stress-wise. And if you're subscribing to any part of the narrative or exposing yourself to content online that is negatively impacting you, you're going to be more susceptible to illness. And I bring that up because, yes, I have healed those parts of me. And I think this is a good segue into our next part two, I guess you'd say. Mm. Because over this past couple of years, I've really learned that how much I got sucked into all these narratives and fear-based things, and also just healing from familial trauma, has really
brought a lot of undealt with emotions.
100%. And so it kind of came to a head where I was like, oh, whoa, hello. Okay. My health is not necessarily 100%, but that's also not reality for some people because I am a highly sensitive person. And now it's really forcing me to face those things that I never had the courage to look at, or I didn't even know that were there, or I didn't want to know that they were there. But also integrating that with parts of things, like, for example, I'm about to get my tongue tie revised, and I think that's a huge part of it. There's structural, physical things that can happen that you can do to support your health. But now more than ever, paying attention to what you're consuming on the internet or what your interpersonal relationships are like, boundaries, lack of boundaries, what is happening in your interpersonal relationships is such a big piece to health.
Toxic thinking patterns too.
Oh my gosh, all of it.
And just again, undealt with emotions and trauma. We've essentially come to understand that that is probably the biggest aspect of health. Mm-hmm. And again, we'll cover that in a part two. But overwhelmingly, all that to say, you are doing far, far better than you were when you were on pharmaceuticals under the care of multiple, quote, experts.
Absolutely.
And you have defied the odds or defied the statistics, so to speak, twice. And God, it's so empowering, me being your husband, watching you be a living, walking, breathing example of what we talk about on the way forward. And I'm sorry to everyone that we're just now doing this. A lot of it is that we typically have, we live right next to Kylie's sister, which is great. And we typically have them babysit so we can go on dates and do things like that. And now this is our date.
Yeah.
Doing this episode. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just because our kids are a lot, it's been hard to just kind of buckle down and do it, which I'd love to get into on the next piece.
I mean, we'll
as well
do multiple episodes, parenting, all of it, emotions. Mm-hmm. Stand-up comedy together. I don't know.
Honestly, yeah, because we're funny. Just ask us.
I love you.
I love you too. Thank you for having me.
Of course.